It's the NPR News Update for Thursday, March 5th. I'm Phil Picardi with the Minnesota News Podcast. Coming up, what's next for Target? Seven men are indicted for pushing drugs across the region, and a new concert hall ushers in a new era of live music in St. Paul. First, lawmakers have named five people to the University of Minnesota Board of Regents. Alex Friedrich has more.
At the beginning of the selection process, the 11-member board was facing a potentially high number of first-time members. But the legislature ended up returning two incumbents, and it appointed an attorney who served as a U of M student regent in the 1990s. Board Chairman Rick Beeson says having experienced members come back to the board will make it easier to get to work quickly.
Having folks return is always, you know, it always takes away that element of surprise.
Beeson and three others will serve the normal 6-year term. The last will serve the remaining 2 years of a term previously held by David Larson, who died in October. Alex Friedrich, Minnesota Public Radio News.
More than 400 St. Paul employees will get a 1% raise because the Department of Veterans Affairs found some of the city's hiring practices violated state law. Curtis Gilbert has more.
The pay increases will cost the city almost $250,000 this year. The extra money is meant to compensate workers from four unions for giving up long-standing promotion rights. Those rights, embedded in union contracts, gave existing employees first dibs on new job openings in the city. In October, Veterans Affairs Commissioner Larry Shelato ruled that system conflicted with a state law designed to give preference to veterans applying for public sector positions. But even before Shelato's ruling, the city had been taking steps to open up its hiring process. Three other city unions gave up their promotion rights in contract negotiations 2 years ago. Curtis Gilbert, Minnesota Public Radio News, St. Paul.
The chief executive of Carlson, the Minnesota-based travel and hospitality giant, is stepping down May 1st after 18 years with the company. Tim Nelson reports.
The company announced the retirement of Trudy Raudio on its website. She took the helm when Hubert Jolie moved to Best Buy in 2012. Carlson said it will have a new leadership structure when Raudio leaves in May. The travel and hospitality operations will each have their own CEO. David Berg, the company's chief operating officer, has been named the CEO for Carlson Hospitality. Doug Anderson has been CEO of Carlson Wagenlee Travel since 2008 and will begin reporting directly to the Carlson board in May. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A survey of want ads shows Minnesota's labor market continues to tighten. Here's Matt Sepik.
The Help Wanted online index compares the number of job listings on the internet to the number of unemployed people. In December, Minnesota was just one of six states where there were more want ads than job seekers. That month, for every 100 Help Wanted ads, there were just 85 unemployed Minnesotans, down slightly from November. In the Twin Cities, just 74 people chased every 100 open positions. Only Salt Lake City had a lower ratio. In February, Minnesota employers put up more than 64,000 new listings. That's a 13% uptick over January. Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News.
All of the lakes and most of the streams in the southwest corner of Minnesota are designated as unsafe for fishing and swimming. Mark Stile has more.
Minnesota Pollution Control Agency testing found the waters contain heavy loads of sediments, nutrients, and bacteria. So much pollution that the MPCA says they're probably not safe for swimming. Fish and other aquatic life may not be able to live in the water. The study covered the streams and lakes which drain west and south from Minnesota into the Missouri River. The MPCA says cleaning up the water is going to require change, especially in farming practices. The study is part of the agency's ongoing survey of conditions in all of the state's 81 major watersheds. Mark Stile, Minnesota Public Radio News, Worthington.
A new study from a University of Minnesota Duluth climate researcher explains what's behind a slowdown in global warming over the last 15 years. Dan Crocker reports.
The rate at which the world's temperature is rising has declined by about half since the late 1990s. Temperatures are still rising, but not at the rate that climate change models have predicted. That in turn has fueled a debate between climate change scientists and those who deny a human link to global warming. But in the report in the journal Science, UMD's Brian Steinman argues that the slowdown has been caused by natural and decades-long variations in ocean temperatures.
Our results simply show that this happened because you know, of internal variations in the climate system that are inherently random, and it can't be predicted by climate model simulations.
Steinman says results show the trend will reverse itself in the next decade or two and will likely lead to an acceleration in global warming. Dan Crocker, Minnesota Public Radio News, Duluth.
Now to Target. The Minneapolis-based company has provided no further clarity about the several thousand layoffs it announced earlier this week. In the void, there's plenty of speculation, rumor, and anxiety about what the cuts will mean, where they will fall. But as our Martin Moylan reports, a company executive may have offered a few clues in a presentation yesterday.
The company says the restructuring, which will primarily hit headquarters positions, is in its early stages and that it will take time. Asked about how many people may lose their jobs, spokeswoman Molly Snyder replied that sharing a number prematurely wouldn't be fair or responsible. And she dismissed increasing internet and workplace chatter about where the cuts will come and who's going or already gone as, quote, strictly rumors and speculation at this point. Analysts agree, given how tight-lipped Target has been. Paula Rosenblum is an analyst with Retail Systems Research.
The company's been so vague about where those cuts are coming from, it's hard to see if they're cutting into bone or if it's just, you know, fat.
But in a meeting with Wall Street analyst Target CFO John Mulligan made some remarks that might point to where the cuts could be focused. Mulligan said one quarter of the $2 billion in expense reductions will come out of suppliers in the form of lower costs of goods. Three quarters will come from selling, general, and administrative spending, which typically refers to staff. He said, for instance, that the company will be looking to communicate more directly with customers. That could mean less spending and fewer people devoted to traditional, less precise marketing approaches.
You'll see us as we communicate with the guest, moving from broad channels like, you know, our Sunday circular to very focused channels like email, social, ways we can communicate directly to the guest.
Mulligan also said the company needs to combine separate information systems, one for the stores and a separate one for the much smaller online business. He says that one grew up on its own, so it wouldn't be dominated by the needs of the stores, or Big Gorilla, as he put it.
Right now we're in the middle of combining two inventory systems and the order management system. Several of the large systems that underpin a retailer have to be combined in the background, and we're in the process of that.
Mulligan also said Target will be hiring amid the layoffs to beef up its data management and information technology. He says for 50 years, building additional stores was the company's growth engine. Now he says it's IT.
There's always the next guest-facing thing. There's always the next capability that we're going to need to build because that's where the guest is going. And IT really becomes that engine that helps us drive that.
Target says online sales currently account for about 2.5% to 3% of its revenue. The retailer says the $2 billion in cuts will help make Target more efficient and help it invest in initiatives that boost sales and profits and make Target Target again. And Target says all that should mean greater rewards for investors. Retail consultant Carol Speakerman says Target has been behind other retailers in trying to cut costs and run leaner.
Many retail companies have been cutting costs and removing layers of middle management in particular because in these more technology-driven times, those types of roles are just not required anymore.
Speakerman expects cuts may be concentrated in marketing and merchandising.
All of the layered structures of buyers and divisional merchandise managers and general merchandise managers and on up are no longer necessary to execute business at scale from a multi-channel perspective.
The planned job cuts are not going over well with Governor Mark Dayton. For one thing, he says he didn't get a customary heads up from the company that the layoffs were coming. He wants to meet with Target CEO Brian Cornell to discuss the job cuts.
I'm very concerned about the people who are going to be laid off, and fortunately we have a good job market right now in Minnesota, but it's still going to be serious disruption for them and for their families. I think this could have and should have been handled differently, but that's just my view.
Dayton's family founded the company that became Target. He said he wants to find out Cornell's commitment to Minnesota. A Target spokeswoman said the company looks forward to working with the governor and other Minnesota elected officials and will share details about the job cuts with them, quote, as we are able. Martin Moylan, Minnesota Public Radio News.
There are a lot more big companies in the Twin Cities than you would expect, given the number of people who live here. That's one of the explanations for what The Atlantic magazine calls the miracle of Minneapolis. The miracle is that this is one of the only places in America with a vibrant economy and affordable housing. Different theories have been thrown around as to why there are so many big companies here, but none have satisfied Miles Shaver. He's a professor at the University of Minnesota's Carlson School of Management, and he's researching the phenomenon. He joined Kathy Werzer this morning.
Now, for those of us not keeping track, how many big companies exist in this area?
Yeah, well, as of last year, there are 17 Fortune 500 firms, and that's what we usually use to brag, but I also think that understates it. We're home to five privately held firms that do over $2 billion in sales, and a whole host of companies that are headquartered elsewhere but have their big business units headquartered here, companies like Boston Scientific or Thomson Reuters.
Now, in the past, we've been told that there are many more large companies that were here, and some of them have moved away. I mean, how's the number fluctuating?
Well, in many ways, it's increased over time. So if we take a look 60 years ago, so back in 1954, there are actually nine in the Twin Cities. And we've increased over time in net, and that's different than a lot of northern industrialized cities.
How does the number of big businesses per capita compare to, say, other cities?
Well, if we look, especially, you know, a couple years ago, there were a couple more. There were 19, and that's when I ran data that compared a lot of different cities around the country. And if you looked at us per capita, we had the most Fortune 500s compared to anyone. And as I mentioned, I think that even understates it because we have so many big privately held firms in town also.
So what theories are out there to explain this?
Well, you know, this is the thing is when I would tell my friends around the world that we have this, the first question is why? And, you know, I didn't grow up here, so I'd ask people and their explanations are, well, it's cold, so we work really hard. And that's certainly true this morning. But, you know, I grew up in Alberta, so my response was, don't even try that one on me. And so a lot of the theories we have for why we have concentrations of businesses in an area just don't hold here. This is not a place like Silicon Valley where all the firms are tech firms. If you look around, the big businesses in town, they're very diverse. They're in a lot of different industries. And it's not one where it's all, you know, so they're based on the natural resources of Minnesota. So, of course, agribusiness is represented in that. But there's no reason why we would necessarily have retail firms headquartered here or why we would have med devices here. I mean, there's a reason why they're here, but it could have been all sorts of other places, too.
Okay, so what's your explanation?
So my explanation is really one of, you know, this. When I take a look at the data, this has been a headquarters town for probably over 100 years. And one of the real key things about headquarters aren't the big buildings, it's the people who work inside them. And I think one of the really interesting things about this place is we have a big concentration of talent that runs big businesses. We've had it for a long time, and it tends to stay in the region and often moves from company to company.
Well, I appreciate your time here this morning.
My pleasure.
Miles Shaver and Kathy Werzer on Morning Edition. Federal prosecutors say seven members of two violent North Minneapolis-based street gangs expanded their criminal enterprise across the region. According to an indictment unsealed yesterday in federal court, gang members sold crack cocaine and heroin in St. Cloud, Duluth, and Fargo. Brad Williams reports.
Prosecutors say gang members built a lucrative drug market in outstate Minnesota because they could make more money selling crack and heroin in areas where drugs are in short supply compared to Minneapolis. They say a rock of crack cocaine sold in Duluth, St. Cloud, or Fargo can go for double the price that it would in the city. According to the indictment, members of two gangs called YNT, which stands for Young and Thuggin, and the Taliban, worked together. U.S. Attorney Andy Luger says members of the gangs also use guns to violently protect their operation. And he says this investigation will weaken the gangs.
Every single case that we bring against gang members makes a dent. And every time we do this, that dent gets larger. So we're not done.
Last year, Lugar's office indicted members of two other Minneapolis gangs in a gun trafficking conspiracy. The people charged in that investigation are alleged members of the 1-9 Dipset and the Stick Up Boys. Law enforcement authorities say over the last several years, members of the 1-9 Dipset and the Stick Up Boys have been embroiled in a bloody feud with members of YNT and the Taliban. They say six gang members have been murdered and five others have been wounded during the violent conflict. Minneapolis Police Commander Catherine Johnson says the alleged members of YNT and the Taliban charged in the drug distribution conspiracy are well known to police officers.
Seven men indicted in this case have collectively been arrested in the city of Minneapolis more than 150 times. They have been involved in more than 40 cases involving either a recovered firearm or a shooting incident.
Minneapolis City Council President Barb Johnson says she's hopeful the investigation will mean people who live in the Northside neighborhood she represents will be able to rest a little easier.
Every week we get the map of shots fired across the city, and North Minneapolis has this very disproportionate share. So I think getting some of these people off the street will decrease that number.
U.S. Attorney Andy Lugar says all but one of the seven men indicted are currently in custody. Brant Williams, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
A new era begins tonight as the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra plays its debut concert in the Ordway Concert Hall. UNCARE reports it's designed specifically for acoustic music and the SPCO in particular.
With its dramatic wave-like ceiling sweeping down to the stage and pristine white walls covered with acoustically friendly abstract shapes, the new Ordway Hall is a sight to behold. But its true magical quality becomes apparent when the SPCO begins to play. The musicians are rehearsing Beethoven's Eroica Symphony. As is now common practice at the SPCO, the entire evening will be musician-led. There is no conductor. Principal second violin Kyu-Yong Kim says the carefully created acoustics of the 1,100-seat hall allow a musical subtlety.
It's so intimate, and so, you know, it changes the way we play because we can play so much softer in here. And it's not about projecting, but drawing the audience in.
The SPCO has been rehearsing in the hall since early January. Principal flute Julia Bogorad-Kogan likens the experience to getting a new instrument.
You have to learn how to play it. You have to learn how it responds, how you want to make an attack, what you need to do to draw the sound out. The same thing is true in a new hall. We actually have to learn how to play in it.
The musicians have been working with an acoustician to adjust both the hall and their playing to the new space. Bogorad-Kogan says the first time she stood in the balcony and heard the sound from the audience perspective, she was blown away.
The sound just envelops you. It's warm, it's rich, it's inviting, and it's really what we had hoped for.
The new concert hall solves what has been a 30-year challenge to efficiently and profitably schedule the building's tenants. When it opened in 1985, it quickly became clear the Ordway was not as flexible a venue as originally envisioned.
So for the first year in the Ordway, which was programmed to have something different in there every day, it was a complete logistical and financial disaster.
Kevin Smith worked for decades at the Minnesota Opera. He participated in the struggles as the Opera, the SPCO, the Schubert Club, the Ordway itself, and early on, the Minnesota Orchestra, tried to find satisfactory ways to share the Ordway main stage. It got really bad at times. First, the Minnesota Orchestra left. Then the SPCO threatened to go too. After years of other approaches failing, it was Smith who one day suggested the unsuggestible, build a new concert hall for the SPCO. Now the president and CEO of the Minnesota Orchestra, Smith says his proposal left people gasping and then agreeing.
That's kind of what happened.
An $80 million capital campaign raised $42 million for the hall and created an endowment. Now the hall is ready to go, much to the delight of SPCO President Bruce Kopuk.
This is a transformational moment for the St. Paul Chamber Orchestra.
Kopuk says the acoustics of the new hall are so good, he expects the SPCO will become an even better orchestra. He predicts the musicians will develop a tighter, more cohesive sound, both at the hall and elsewhere. He also believes the hall will draw guest musicians from all over the world. He says featuring Beethoven's Eroica at Thursday and Friday's opening concerts is just a taste of things to come.
For the SPCO to play that piece unconducted is a significant artistic accomplishment. It's ever so slightly audacious, but that's why we're here, is to do audacious things.
Both concerts are sold out. Ewan Kerr, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's the NPR News Update for Thursday. I'm Phil Picardi. Glad you came along. I'll have the Friday podcast of Minnesota News.